Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Wash your hands. Aisling McGann. Aisling, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
First of all, tell us how you are today. That's really important.
I'm good. I'm really good. I still have a slight cough and just a slight headache, but I'm amazing. I'm really doing fantastic.
So you've come through, like the vast majority of people will, you've come through COVID-19.
I have. Okay. I tested positive last Saturday.
Okay, and the reason you contacted us is you want to reinforce the government message. Please do everything you're told to do. Over 70, stay indoors, social distancing, keep outdoor activity to an absolute minimum. Tell us when you first, you have four children, by the way.
Yeah, my friend got in touch with me and she said, I'm after sending in your story and told them about it. She said, like, just being a single parent was quite difficult to manage it all. On the Wednesday, on the 18th of March, I felt I had swollen glands and I just wasn't feeling the best. Now my daughter, my 20-year-old, wasn't feeling well for the 3 days previous. She kind of had, we thought it was a chest infection, and she pained in her body, and she wasn't feeling the best at all. Mm-hmm. So we put that down to a chest infection, and she was in her room, and that was that, and that was fine. Now from the time that the kids ended up on lockdown from school, I closed my house off totally. I didn't go out, I didn't have the children out. And then on the Wednesday, I felt my own gland swollen, and I rang my doctor, and he put me on doxycycline and an antibiotic. And then that night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, my daughter came in to me, and I was in bed, and I was freezing. Like, I was so cold, I had to get into a shower to kind of get the heat into me. And I went back into bed then, and it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up and I couldn't breathe at all. My breathing was so bad, like I wanted to get sick, but it was just so difficult. And I got into a bath. I didn't know what to do. I was kind of panicking because I was just myself and the four children here. And I got into a bath and with Vicks and tea tree oil, and I stayed in it for about an hour to help with my breathing.
Okay.
I rang my doctor at 9 o'clock that morning, and he rang me back at 11:30, and he was out on call and told me to go to the hospital, which I did.
Right.
And they put me, I ended up in the coronavirus A&E ward in there, and they said to me that my breathing was bad, and I was showing symptoms. I had no taste. And I couldn't breathe. I was still finding it very difficult. But the end result was they couldn't test me because the hospital policy was, unless you were admitted, they were running low on tests, that they weren't testing people.
Okay.
So I was told to go home and self-isolate for 14 days, and nobody'd come in to me or to have contact with anyone. So I did, and I went home, and I just went through the motions, really. It was really hard. Now, I was quite sick, so being away from the children kind of didn't really affect me at that stage because I was sleeping an awful lot, and it was very scary. Now, just being in the room and isolated, because obviously the doctor doesn't want to come near you. You can't blame them. Nobody wants to come in, and I just had to kind of go with it. The sensation in my body was like I was sunburnt all over, and someone just sticking. Yeah, just burn, and my body just felt burn. And I said to my uncle the whole time, you know, I think the worst part is my body is so sore, and it's like someone's just sticking pins in, like it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And then I was going from hot to cold the whole time, and the headache was like a wine hangover. It was just like that heavy headache that wouldn't lift. And that's how it went for the couple of days. I wasn't eating, I'd vomiting and diarrhea for the whole, like I lost a stone in the 2 weeks. That's the one, I tell you. But I had bottled water the whole time, so there was no reason for anybody to come in and out of my room. I had my ensuite in my bedroom.
Okay.
And I just drank bottled water the whole time. And then on the Sunday, my friend rang me, and I said, God, I feel great. I feel like I have a new lease of life. This was Mother's Day. I said, I actually feel like I can breathe again, and I'm getting through this. Like, I actually feel great today. And then about 3 hours later, my uncle rang me and I said, like, Johnny, I don't feel well. I said, I really, my heart is racing here and I can't breathe again. I'm panicking. Like I said, like, I really, really don't feel well.
Yeah.
And he was like, Ashley, ring the doctor. And I rang the doctor and the doctor told me, ring the hospital. So I rang the hospital and they said, listen, you're on everything. They sent me home from the hospital with a nebulizer to begin with on the Thursday. And they sent me home on steroids for my lungs. So the hospital said to me, listen, you're on everything that you can be on at home. The next stage is you're going to have to come into hospital because there's nothing more that can be done for you at home.
Right.
They said you need to ring an ambulance and you need to tell them that you're showing symptoms and they'll ring in advance before they bring you into the hospital. So the ambulance arrived. I rang the ambulance. I rang my uncle back and I said, I'm afraid going in. I said, I'm so afraid I'm not going to come out again. I said, like, I don't think I can fight this anymore. I said, my body just can't fight this, Johnny. And he said to me, Ashley, you need to go in. He said, you have to go in. He said, you have the kids to think of. He said, and you're not getting any better, he said, and you need to do it. So I rang the ambulance and they came and they took me in. Now, they had the lights on the way up the road and I was vomiting in the ambulance as well. And when I got in, they admitted me and they tested me at 4 o'clock in the morning on Mother's Night, say Sunday night, Monday morning.
Yeah.
And then I was kept in on a ward in Drogheda and it was all private rooms, isolation. And I was put on IV fluids and antibiotics for the 3 days in the hospital. And then the day I came home, the doctor just came in that morning and she was like, oh, you're being discharged, you're able to go home. And I was like, oh God, I'm fine, it's very hard to breathe. And she was like, no, that's okay, we have antibiotics there. And like, nobody kind of came in or out to you, so because obviously with the high risk of infection. So I went home and
had they confirmed at that stage, Aisling, sorry
no,
for interrupting,
originally yeah. They told me that they'd wait, I'd be discharged when I got my results, but then because of the delay with the tests, I didn't get my results until a week later from my test. They rang me on Saturday just gone to tell me I tested positive.
You had the COVID-19.
Yeah. But when I got home then I found the cough was the worst for me, like the breathing. I struggled. Like when I was coughing, it was bringing up my temperature and then it was making my heart rate. When I was in the ambulance, my heart rate was 136.
Yeah.
And the ambulance man told me my bloods were 11 and anything over 7.5 is an infection.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor said to me in the hospital, he said, listen, your body is fighting it, but we just need to help you fight it. It's just not fighting it itself, so we need to help you
The way. Had you any previous underlying health problems?
Nothing. I'm never sick. I'm never. Wow. The height of it would be swollen glands. That's why I originally just thought it was just swollen glands. That's when I first got it.
And
I'm never sick.
It was like you were being sunburned. Did you say pins and needles or people just sticking needles into you?
It was just like someone just constantly sticking a pin into like sunburned skin.
Okay.
Like it was the pain. I cried on the phone to my mom. I was just crying with the pain in my body. The pain was just so bad and I had no taste, I had no smell.
And what were you feeling inside your body?
I was so afraid. I was so afraid for my children. Like, I had to listen to my 4-year-old crying at my bedroom door to come in.
Yeah.
To come in for a hug and for a cuddle, and she wanted to come in to me. Like, you know, my 8-year-old son was, you know, like comforting her and telling her it was okay. And their room is across from me. And like, my 4-year-old usually sleeps with me in my bed.
Yeah,
You know, she had, like, my 8-year-old was comforting her one night, saying, like, oh, you sleep with me, Fava. And, you know, like, my daughter sent me a photo of him with his arms around her in bed one night, like, and it broke me. And, you know, my eldest girl sent me a message when I was in the hospital and she just said to me, like, Mom, like, if anything happens to you, like, I'm actually just going to be an orphan, like, you know. Like, it was just, like, emotionally, it was such a battle, emotionally and mentally as well as physically. Like, I texted my friend and I said to her, like, geez, just, like, look after my kids if anything happens to me. Like I said, just make sure they're okay. Like, and just, it was so hard mentally and physically. And then you're just, like, you're isolated. Like, you're shut off from everyone. Like, you know, it's so hard, the isolation. you don't know. You're just praying to God. Like, like my brother passed away 8 years ago, and I spoke to him the whole time, and I was like, Mark, just please, just do whatever you have to do to get me through this. Like, just.
You were praying to him, praying to Mark.
Yeah. And everybody was messaging me and telling me they were praying, and I got great faith in that. You know, like, I really, like when someone said to me, like, they sent me a photo of a candlelight, and I was like, that really means so much. Like, it was horrific. Like, it was so bad.
Now, remind listeners, Aisling McGowan is now almost fully recovered from CV19, aren't you, Aisling?
I am.
That's the message you want to get across.
100%.
And you've given us an incredible glimpse into how serious this can be without it going to the next level, which is happening for a small percentage, but still a significant percentage of people who unfortunately are dying. But you've come through it, but you want to give us a glimpse of how awful this can be. Now, you also, Aisling, and I want to give a warning to listeners, you sent us in a tape of, or a video actually, well, it's a recording of some form, of how your breeding went at one stage.
Yeah.
What prompted you to record that?
My uncle, I sent it to my uncle from the hospital. Okay. He said to me, he was ringing me, and I was like, I can't talk. And he was like, yeah, just answer the phone. And I was like, no, I genuinely can't talk. Like, yeah. I said, Johnny, like, I can't actually even breathe here. Like, I was so afraid. And I sent him a clip of my breathing. And he was like, oh my God. Like, people don't realise when you're saying, oh, I can't breathe. Like, the clip, like, is just, it's daunting to hear. That voice clip of my breathing, it's like, even now listening to it, it's like, oh my God, was I really that bad? Like, it was horrific. Like,
okay, so you'll talk us into it. This is a what stage were you at this stage? What day were we? Was
The doctor, because I said to the doctor, I said, I felt great this morning, and he said to me, that's what's happening. He said, an awful lot of people, he said, on day four or five are feeling great, and then they take a dip between day 5 to 8 and they get worse, and then they end up in hospital. And that's exactly what happened with me.
Okay, again, a warning. Young ears should not be listening to this, and also the statement that Aisling is almost completely recovered.
Yeah, I am.
And this is the recording you made to send to your uncle to though he seems to be an incredible uncle, by the way. You talked about him a lot.
Yes, my uncle Johnny.
Yeah. This is the recording you made to impress on people the effect this COVID-19 can have. And Aisling, were you panicking? And what was your, like, one is, I presume there's pain there, obviously, in trying to breathe like that.
Yeah, and I had a mask on. And I was crying. I was crying, even listening to that, like, I was very emotional. Yeah. I was crying, I had a mask on, and I was just praying so hard. Like, I was just like, just please, just let me breathe. You can't breathe, and all you want to do is to breathe, and you have this mask on you because obviously you have to wear the mask, and it was so difficult. So difficult. I was just, it was horrific.
Okay.
Horrific.
And you've given us, as a vivid description of what was happening on your skin. You feel you were sunburned, someone was sticking needles into you, aches, pains. But what were you feeling in your lungs and inside your body? What was that feeling like, Aisling?
I felt at one stage, I didn't know if it was the steroids. I said to my cousin, I feel like my insides are bubbling. I said, like, I just feel like I'm overheating, like, not like a temperature, but like bubbling. I felt like it was just my insides were bubbling inside, basically. And I just kept drinking plenty, loads of fluids, and the nurses said that to me in the hospital, oh, you're doing great with your water, just keep drinking plenty of water. And I did. But, like, as regards people being out and about, like, my daughter went over to the village one of the days in Carlingford. Like, it's obviously Carlingford's a busy little village, and she was like, Mom, like, it's crazy, there's people in the park, there's busloads of people out and about, like,
madness,
there's teenagers out. And I was in my room, like, struggling with this, and hearing that there's people outside, like, on family day out, and I was like, people just aren't taking this serious. Like, people need to like, you know, even to the likes of going in and out of the shop or to a garage or to, like, you're just not safe. Like, you can't see this. You know, you don't know who has it. You don't know who has symptoms. And it's just, like, we're all cracking up indoors. We're all cracking up in our houses. And, you know, but it's just, it's so dangerous. Like, you know.
And then when were you able to open your bedroom door and let the 8-year-old...
Thursday. Thursday, we had great excitement Thursday morning. My son, my 8-year-old, stayed up late on Wednesday night. And I got took him into bed Wednesday night. He watched a movie with my daughter, my 15-year-old. She's been amazing. She's been absolutely amazing with him. Like, she's been making Rice Krispie cakes, and she was WhatsApping me pictures of them. And then Don Keaton's in Dundalk, I rang them up, and I ordered, like, all arts and crafts, and they delivered
great idea.
Yeah, it was brilliant. She done, like, clay making with them and painting, and they've made me paint pictures, and they WhatsApped them to me and to my bedroom.
This is from another part of the house. It's incredible.
Yeah. Okay. Like downstairs.
So tell us how you have unveiled the time, or that you got to the moment where you could open the door and that you could hug them again.
Yeah, my little girl came into me that morning, and she just, like, opened the door. At one stage, throughout, like, my bedroom door was open. When I kind of the last couple of days, I had my door open and I was talking to them from the landing, but I was like, don't come in, stay outside, like, stay far outside the landing. And they were looking in at me, so she kept saying, 3 more days until I get to cuddle you, Mum, or 2 more days until I get to cuddle you. And, you know, a couple of times she'd be like, can I just have one quick cuddle, just one quick? And I was like, oh, you can't.
So it was like Christmas morning. I watched the video. It was like Christmas morning.
Yeah, she came running in, and she was like, I miss these cuddles. And she had her arm wrapped around me, and, like, she was like, oh, she just kept petting me down and touching my face.
There's a video. Let's try and play the video of it. It's the sound, which is... but you'll get it. I think you'll get a glimpse, so to speak, from the sound of the excitement when Aisling eventually came out of self isolation.
I get the cuddles back.
You got the cuddles back.
I love you.
I love you too.
And that's your 4-year-old.
That's my 4-year-old. She was like, I got the cuddles back. And she just kept kissing me. Like, it was so good. So good.
Okay, I hope it gets back to for your health. I know you're well on the road to recovery, which is fantastic.
I am. The doctor put me back on steroids. So I was on 8 steroids a day from when I got home. They put me on extra steroids just to build my lungs back up and get me back. Okay. But I do. I feel great.
Your 20-year-old Jade. Is Jade in the house?
Yeah, Jade's just 20, and there's Faith, she's 15.
Yeah.
And there's Lennon, he's 8, and then there's Vada, she's 4. My kids have just been amazing. My 15-year-old, she's been so great with them, like, doing dances and just entertaining them and watching movies, and she's a great little mommy. She's great. She's been amazing.
They're gorgeous names, Jade, Faith, Lennon. Is Lennon called after John Lennon?
Lennon, I was pregnant. I thought of that name. I was like, oh, I heard it. And I was like, I love that name. I like unusual names. And then Vada is from the film My Girl. The girls used to love that film when they were younger.
And Lennon, of course, wrote the incredible songs. A lot of people are playing it at the minute.
I know.
So it's an incredible, joyous time for you now, Aisling.
It is great, and I've had great support and great friends. Okay.
Tell us about your Uncle Johnny.
My Uncle Johnny is like, everybody needs an Uncle Johnny. He's the best. He's the go-to in all our family for everything. Like, he really is. He's brilliant.
What's that DIY, and he does everything for you, does he?
He does everything. He's so hard. He had an accident years ago. Like, he fell, like, working, and he fell, like, through a building, like, and ended up really bad. Like, he nearly died himself. And he's brilliant. He's amazing. He's so good. And then my friends, like, Leah and Carmel, were so good. Like, my friend Leah she's a yoga instructor and all positivity. So she was banging that down the phone to me, like, every night on video calls. And It was so good.
Okay, you've been through hell, Aisling. You're back out again, thank God, and your words are a warning to people to heed all the government instructions. I wish you well, Aisling, and your gorgeous children, Jade, Faith.
Thanks very much.
Vada. Okay. Yeah. And of course, Lennon called after this man here. This is for you and your wonderful family, Aisling.
Thanks so much.
Do mind yourself. You're a wonderful person. You're a wonderful person. Mind yourself.
Bye.
Bye.
Imagine there's no heaven. Easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky.
The genius, that was John Lennon. John would be what he'd be nearly 80, wouldn't he, if he hadn't been taken down so young. Reminder of how fragile life can be. He was only 40, and indeed two children, as you know, and Julian Lennon. It's his birthday next Wednesday, actually. He's 57. But that's for Aisling McGowan, with that remarkable story of going through hell with COVID-19 and coming through it, and her remarkable children, Jade, Faith, Lennon, called after himself, and Veja. And well done. I think it's people listening to that story will think twice if they're thinking of trying to circumvent the government regulations at the moment. Okay, 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, Anne McCormack. Anne, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Good.
Thanks for having me on.
And thanks for contacting us. What is your dilemma? What's the problem?
Well, my dilemma is this. I have carers coming into the house for my husband.
Okay.
I have them every day.
Right.
Coming in, different people all the time. Okay. Like the same girls every week, but, every day different. But I did think that they only have gloves on them. They never had any masks.
Oh,
I did raise the issue about the masks, and I rang the community services and said it was a concern of mine that the carers weren't using masks.
Right.
And now we have the lockout. We're not even allowed to go out.
I'm in the 80s,
my husband the same. Now, he's the one that has the carers doing his personal showering and changing bags and doing different things for him. And I'm concerned because he hasn't any mask. Now, I wear a mask when they come in and I put a hanky with tea tree oil on it.
Yeah.
But he's a sore face, so he can't wear the mask across his face. So I am concerned that the carers are not protected or either are they.
And what did they say when you raised the issue?
They said it wasn't that, they hadn't been directed to do anything like
but
that.
Would the carers that are coming in to look after your husband, would they be going to other houses before and after?
They'd be there beforehand and then they'd be going out. Like they've about four or five different people every day that they would be with. And I just said, really, they're meeting their families as well most until this lockout. So the virus is kind of gone.
Can you or your husband, but you, I suspect, in terms of having to do the work, could you manage without the carers?
No, not. He has to get a bag kind of dress. He's a few different issues
as well. Okay.
Well, I did cancel them for I only have three coming now.
Okay.
Three different carers because I was afraid for myself and my husband. If he gets it, I get it and I look after him.
So you've cut down on the number of days the carers are coming in, which means you've got to do much more, unfortunately.
I have to do an awful lot more, and I'm in my 80s as well.
Okay, so your question is, what is the position with carers and
going to the home?
Personal protection equipment. It's a good question. We'll try and get an answer to it, because I know in the UK they were very worried about that way of and the carers were complaining they couldn't get equipment, but there is equipment here now in Ireland, so we wait and see. Anne, you mind yourself. And
thanks very much, and Joe. Congratulate Margaret.
Yeah, great.
She's a wonderful woman, as, for her age.
As you are as well.
Joe, we are. We were brought up in the hard times, Joe.
Yeah, we're hardy crowd. Yeah, different times now.
Different times. But it's a good time.
Okay. Anne McCormick is in Wicklow. Glenn McGowan. Glenn, good afternoon. Up to Drogheda. What happened?
Hiya, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, Grant.
Basically, I'm working in the family business, Scholars Townhouse Hotel up in Drogheda.
Yeah.
And we had been closed, unfortunately, because of the epidemic. But due to popular demand, we decided to open the takeaway element of the business for some takeaway food due to a lot of the locals
looking for
it, basically. And funnily enough, the first call I got at 4 o'clock, just when the lines were open, the lady who lives across the road, who wasn't really able to collect, a bit elderly, so I said I'd drop it around. So funnily enough, her address, which I won't give it out,
turns out it's a similar number
to another house in a road, and the chap afterwards actually told me they get the same letters or something.
Okay.
So it was a bit of a coincidence. But as I went to the wrong house, there was two lads there in orange high-vis jackets.
Okay.
And I just thought this was unusual because the place is a ghost town, Joe. There's no one around, nobody anywhere. And these two lads are chatting away to this elderly fella at his door.
Right.
They had an A4 laminated piece of paper with COVID-19 and the red and the yellow and black and that kind of thing, and they had some sanitizer bottles. But I just had a bit of an instinct. As soon as I looked at these fellas, I kind of said, this just doesn't seem right to me. So as I got closer, kind of just came it behind them and heard them saying hospital and €10 and this kind of thing. So when I heard them mentioning cash, I just intervened. I said, look, lads, well, what's going on here? What are you up to? And then you could see they were a bit startled. They were a bit shocked. They had broken English. They weren't local. I'm not sure where they were from. But they were a bit shocked. And I asked them for identification or what department they were from, what they were up to. And pretty quickly, I could see they were up to no good, you know. So basically, well, I can't say this on the radio, but I suppose I told them to clear off, so, you know,
but they were,
get up the road.
First of all, the HSE don't send anyone around like that, full stop. They were scamming. They were trying to scam old people.
Definitely.
And, what was their trick? They were offering to what? To sanitise the house?
Well, pretty much, this is what I found out from... There was a great... When I posted a video on the Scholars Facebook page, there was a great response in the community, and lots of people got back to me saying what they were saying at the door. So they were basically saying they were from the council to some people or from the hospital to other people, and they were saying we're going to sanitise their door handles or their house or their windows and
these
kind of things.
Worryingly, Glenn, were they trying to get into the house?
To be honest, from what I saw... They weren't, but I intervened literally when they would have just been speaking to this guy. Now, I suppose the thing to take from this is, if an elderly person, he seemed like he was going to turn on his heels, go into his kitchen and get some money. So then maybe they'd say, look, we could sanitise the inside of the house and so on and so forth. So I suppose just the main idea here is just to make sure elderly and vulnerable people know that the HSE or council won't be knocking on anybody's door.
And it's just... run them, as a fella said, and I've heard of some fellas offering to disinfect the driveway, would you believe? Nonsense.
Awful.
Okay, Glenn, how are you managing you're doing the takeaway business?
It's been tough, Joe. You know, we just opened up a pub actually in January. We were only open for a couple of months, and we've closed and we've reopened. Look, Joe, we've been through a recession. I think the Irish are tough and resilient people, so I'm sure we'll all be back on our feet when this is all over with. But
guards,
I just wanted to mention, Joe, great response from the guards. They were fantastic, the Drogheda Garda, throughout that whole situation.
Well done,
and they've been on the beat a lot, and they're delivering meals.
Yeah, there's lots of Garda brilliant at the moment.
Delivering meals on wheels and all the rest of it, you know. Yeah. So I just wanted to give them a shout.
God, incredible. My daughter had to go out this morning for a necessary journey for an elderly great friend of hers. No, no, she's elderly. She is, because she's fantastic.
Right.
And she was stopped by a young Garda in Clontarf and out near the Esso station. And she said he was an absolute gentleman when he told her what he was doing. An absolute gentleman. And he was about the same age as well. Anyway, but so they're doing brilliant at the minute. Absolutely doing brilliant. Well done, Glenn. Well spotted. Thanks.
Cheers, thanks a million.
Like, Colette Monk, do you want to get your quick scam story in? Fake HSE. What is it, Colette?
Yes, Joe. It was actually coincidentally much the same as the last one. I just got this had been forwarded. I'm in Churchtown Residents Association, and it was forwarded from another member, Paul, and he just says that just to let people know that scammers have been going around targeting elderly homeowners with a fake HSE ID. It's a laminated page, really, and offering to sterilise door and window handles for maybe 10 or 20 euros.
Well, that's the same scam, yeah.
Yeah, so it's obviously, unfortunately, it's like the corona, it's spreading very rapidly.
And what part of the country? You're not in Drogheda?
I'm in Dundrum.
Oh, God.
Dundrum and Dublin.
So there's a few of them at it now.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, lads, get off the stage now.
But at least you can get to a very wide audience.
People. Okay, how are you managing in the lockdown, Colette?
Oh, I can't complain at all. And we're, like everybody else, slightly bored, but we'll all have sterile houses at the end.
Sure will, yeah, we sure will.
But
a
lot of people in a lot worse situation, not it just keeping busy, that's all.
Okay,
yeah.
Well done. Thanks, Colette.
Listen, thanks for the good work here.
That's our job, it's a privilege. Thanks indeed, Colette. 51551, my chance.